Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, we're live in Katy's, Kentucky at Edge Media, and I'm here with Beth Mann. We're going to take a tour of this amazing radio facility. It's all coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, keeping you connected with your community with support and webinars, online at nautel.com/webinars. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host, and this is our 496th episode of TWRT. We've been doing this for a little over 10 years. Delighted to be here, and usually I introduce Chris Tobin right after me, but I'm going to introduce this lady standing next to me here. Beth Mann, how are you?
I'm doing terrific.
Why are we here in this room?
Well, we're going to celebrate the birthday, June 4th, of DJ Everett III, and we have 100 years of radio history to celebrate today as well. So we're looking forward to having you here.
And we're going to take a tour after one of our spot breaks here.
It's very cool. I get geeked out over that.
Can you tease the tour a little bit?
Well, let's just say we have radios for every year starting at 1919, except for 1 year.
Okay. What year? We'll find out what year is missing. So you even have radios from like the year of my birth, 1962.
I absolutely have lots of 1962s.
That's going to be cool to see that. So that's what we're in for over the next hour, is seeing an amazing radio museum. It's the DJ Everett III Radio Room.
That's right.
Now, Beth, what do you do here for Edge Radio?
I'm the head plumber. Well, actually, I'm the owner of the company. We have seven radio signals here, licensed to Hopkinsville, Katy's, in Princeton, Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And I've been in the radio business for 26 years, spent 10 in television first, and became owner in 2015.
And if I'm not mistaken, you and I are actually business partners in a small way.
Yeah, in a small way, in a very small place of Kauai, and a station I've not seen yet, but you got to build from the ground up, so I know.
You're a part owner and you've not seen the station.
Believe this. I mean, I go to Cleveland, Mississippi to see Larry Fuss, but I don't get to go to Kauai and see our station that we own together.
It's a tax deductible trip, I suppose.
Yeah. You just got to have time, right?
You gotta, and money.
Time and money. I mean, if you're in radio, you don't have both of those. You have one or the other.
Chris Tobin is my co-host. Chris, glad to have you in. Welcome in. How are things in New York City?
Things in New York City are as they have been for the last 9 weeks, moving slow. Very few people on the streets. Last couple of days been a little tense with people making a statement. Other than that, the usual business is usual, you know, business as usual, so to speak.
Now, it looks like you are not at your usual rooftop or side of the building perch. You look like you're in a studio.
No. In keeping with the spirit of Broadcast Bionics owner, I'm out and about. I'm actually in a performance studio in Newark, New Jersey at the radio station. We had a last-minute change in staffing, so I'm out here to help out do some stuff. So I have a Steinway piano behind me here. I don't know if you could hear anything.
Yeah.
But drum set to the other side, and we can have a jam session if I can find some people interested in coming by.
Well, Chris, this is one of the shows where you really get to be a spectator, and I appreciate your participation whenever you're along. But on this show, Beth and I are going to be walking through this DJ Everett III radio room and looking at radios that people have received radio on for the last 101 years.
Yeah, isn't that cool? This is the 100th anniversary of radio.
Yeah, officially.
2020,
yes.
Officially.
But you do have something over there. Oh, 19. You said?
Just I've got 19. A 1919.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. There were no stations to pick up. But
that's right.
So we'll begin that in just a second. Chris, you and I have got to talk about not one, but two events happening next week from Nautel. They're continuing their interactive transmission talk on Tuesday. It's their roundtable where you get to participate. Tuesday, June 9th. Put it on your calendar because I won't be here to remind you before then. Tuesday, June 9th at 12 noon Eastern Time. It's a discussion on transmitter site travel stories. And they've got three perfect people for this. Jeff Welton, who's been to probably 400 transmitter sites, maybe 500 in his life. Alex Hartman will be on that show. And Rich Parker will be on the show. Rich has been our guest 3 or 4 times on This Week in Radio Tech, and Rich works in Alaska for Coast Alaska. He goes to transmitter sites that are in crazy places, in helicopters. He climbs mountaintops. He goes in all kinds of crazy seaplanes in Alaska to get to his transmitter sites. They're going to talk about challenging sites and how to be prepared when you get to a site. How to be safe at a site, of course, and how to get your job done there on Transmitter Talk Tuesday. You need to go to the Nautel website and register for that. It's coming up Tuesday the 9th. Chris, do you have the information in front of you about the disaster recovery webinar on Wednesday?
Yes, also next week, the Wednesday webinar, June 10th at 12 noon Eastern, is Disaster Recovery and Lessons Learned. And Jeff Welton will host with two engineers who recently had firsthand experience at disaster recovery, Charlie Wooten, Hurricane Michael, and Thomas Morris, California Camp Fire. Both have lessons learned on how to minimize worry when disaster threatens. Now, all of us in broadcasting are familiar with mission-critical operations. Those of us in the engineering side of things, technical side, are always thinking about mission-critical systems and, you know, Five9's reliability and what to do in the scenario I like to call what if. So on Wednesday of next week, what if disaster strikes your facility? What kind of broadcast business recovery systems do you have? And I think this will make for a great session. And as always, Jeff will be a person to listen to and bring in the stories to life in ways that you probably would never have imagined.
Awesome. Awesome. And so be sure you register at nautel.com/webinars, nautel.com/webinars. So I have an idea for starting this tour. And usually you'd start at the beginning, right? 1919, 1920.
Right. Okay. We can start anywhere you want.
But I'd kind of like to, well, Chris is going to tell us about another product in a few minutes, and okay. I'd like to get started with the same time the radio station got started.
Okay.
And you've got a beautiful display right over here. So why don't we, Tom, if you could kind of follow us over, we're going to walk over here to a display that Beth, why don't you tell us about what we're looking at right over here. Tom, if you want to kind of get scoot over here. You can get us and then pan over to what we're talking about.
So basically, you're looking at the archives of WKDZ AM,
okay.
which signed on the air on April 8th of 1966.
Mm-hmm.
Leo Wilson was the engineer. He signed on several stations in Kentucky, including Hopkinsville. He worked for the infamous Lackey family and put WSON on the air in Henderson. He put several stations on the air, and his brother, Willie Wilson, was the first general manager of the company. So you'll see there a picture of Willie,
okay.
Where he was actually turning the transmitter on for the first time. And the newspaper was our friend at that time and did some coverage for us, which we were very appreciative of. And they formed Barkley Lake Broadcasting Company.
Now, these things that look like microphones here aren't really microphones, are they?
That's correct. Those are promotional radios. I wish they still made those because you could lock it into one dial position. You know that old liner about lock it in and rip the knob off? So that basically is what those promotional radios were. So that one's locked to 1570 KC, 1240 KC. So very cool, but I don't think they make those anymore. But they made those like in the mid-60s, early 70s.
And here we have, now, this is from after you went on the air, 1975.
Right. So my point was I had planned to only collect through 1966, mm-hmm. but, you know, I was born in 65, and I know I'm old, so there's still some old radios that were born later than 1966. So we just started kind of picking those up as we went and ended up with a pretty nice collection from 66 on. That's a beautiful Panasonic.
Yeah, it's a beautiful shape. Yeah. This channel master's in beautiful shape, too. Look at that.
Yeah, it is a really nice radio. We just put a couple of those there in display, and then right behind you, you'll see all of radios that came up after 1966. So a pretty nice collection of transistor radios. So you've got everything from one of the original Sony radios. Sony, of course, was huge in the transistor business, and I just keep adding there. I've got 3 or 4 now.
Look at this Ross Micro 10 transistor radio, that little tiny anyone there.
Isn't that a neat little radio?
Yeah.
Very cool. And sometimes a lot of these radios were radios that people gave to me. So they find them, you know, when they're cleaning out estates or they're cleaning out a garage, and they'll end up just calling me and saying, hey, would you like to have this radio? Is it old enough for your collection?
So which one's the Sony, you said?
There's a Sony. It's over on the other.
Okay.
It's
okay. You see that black one with the silver stripe down the side?
Yes.
I had that radio as a kid.
You did?
I sure did.
So the man that gave me that, it was his father's radio, and he won it at a fair. And it's an AM-only radio, and he was still playing it, still had it onto our station when he gave it to me. So that was Mr. Bailey.
There's a Channel Master radio back there.
Yeah, there's about every brand you can think of. I love to find it when I can find the box and the desk.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's cool, too.
Now, let's take a longer look at the second shelf here, if you don't mind, Tom. We have this a Sunny SX100. That's that black plastic one back there.
Right. So that came from a guy in Hopkinsville who grew up listening to oldies radio, 1480 on the AM dial. That was his radio. So he gave me that. That was pretty cool. I just started these color radios. Those were Flavo radios, kind of like Lifesavers, you know? Radio Shack, of course, made all realistic products. And so I'm trying to talk Larry Fuss out of a pink one of those.
Now, that one with the pink and wood grain, that's a Studebaker on it.
Well, it is. It is actually a replica radio, and I don't normally buy any replicas. In fact, I think that's the only one in this collection in the radio room. But we hold a major breast cancer awareness event here in October for breast cancer awareness, and I'm buying pink radios for that event. So
there's another. I remarked at the little tiny micro 10 transistor. Here's one that's even smaller.
Yeah, isn't that great? And that is in terrific condition, actually, in the original box. You just don't find that very often. You'll find maybe the radio or the box, but you rarely find it all together.
The gift box that comes with beautiful. Now, on the next shelf down, look at this funky mod radio.
Isn't that the coolest thing ever? Yeah. So Zenith is my favorite radio, and you'll see that as you go through the collection. Okay. About a third of my total radios are Zenith products. Mm-hmm. But this was, of course, 70s, very 70-ish. And this one you wore actually on your wrist, where you also could put it on your bicycle handlebars.
It may have been around that time or just after that, you know, your favorite girl in high school would be washing her hair with Gee, Your Hair Smells Terrific.
Yeah, absolutely.
Certainly the Partridge Family would have been on TV.
So that's a Christmas gift. I kept it out and listened to it for a few weeks before I put it behind glass.
And there is a Sony way back there, a table radio.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Sony. I mean, I've been buying Sony products since the 70s. And so I pick up quite a few of those when I find them. They're very collectible. People seem to really be attracted to that Japanese-made radio.
Although it wasn't around in the mid-60s when you guys signed on the air, on the bottom shelf, there's that Sony AM stereo radio. I looked at the SRF-1000. I think that's what
That's actually probably late 70s or early 80s, actually. But like I said, you know, some of these radios just kind of came about from people that have given them to us. And I really didn't intend to do transistors at all after 66. But as you can see, that collection's growing pretty quickly.
Now, we've got a whole lot more to look at. And Tom's going to swing the camera back over here. Coming up, we're going to start in 1919 and make our way all the way around to what, present day.
Right.
And at the end of the show, we've got a whole studio, right?
Yeah. That's
And using real equipment from...
That's right. So our engineer, Rob Beasley, built out the studio for us, and we're trying to take it back sort of to a 1966 timeline. So he got the record player working and everything for us. Oh, so it's very cool.
So that's coming. That's coming up. Chris Tobin's got some good words for you from our great sponsor, Broadcast General Store, and the Broadcast Tools Pro Mix 4. Chris?
Why, thank you, Kirk. Well, keeping the tradition of the radios that you're going to be hearing and watching about, Broadcast General Store and Broadcast Tools Pro Mix 4, a winning combination. That's correct. Pro Mix 4 is a compact, full-featured monaural audio mixing console, perfect for almost any broadcast studio. Now, don't panic. It's monaural for a reason. It's for spoken words, sports, talk, news of that sort. And it minimizes the confusion that I plug the cable in the right slot, left or right or both. So that's what's important. Next, we have to remind everybody that it features three combination, microphone line inputs and a dedicated fourth input that may be switched between balanced line input and built-in USB audio interface. Think about that. Three combination microphone line inputs, very handy, mic line, and a dedicated fourth input that may be switched between a balanced input or the built-in USB interface. Now, USB interface, you know, that's a very popular product nowadays, important feature. This Pro Mix 4 is one package. It's one form factor. It's very important to understand in a busy sports arena or even a news event or maybe a home studio that has a lot of activity. 3/4-inch stereo headphone outputs are included with individual controls for volume mix pan and allow custom headphone mixes. Now, how many of you have had guests who have been very particular about how the headphones sound, loud and low? Three different ways of doing it isn't very important. Rather than the days of where we used to split it all with one feed and then one knob for all three headphones, not something you want to do anymore. Other features include switch selectable, that is, program limiter. Very handy for those folks who are very robust and like to really jump out and say something. XLR, program out, balance outputs, very important, handy to split out and do other things with. Monitor output with muting and volume control. Yeah, something you overlook when you're doing studio home studio stuff. Mix minus output for connections to, external telephone hybrid or any external source that needs something with a mix minus. We're very important. We always overlook those things. So it's a great choice for remote broadcasts and podcasting applications. That goes without saying. Just remember the winning combination, Broadcasters General Store. Just simply call them 352-622-7700. That number again is 352-622-7700. Or go to the website and check on a few things while you look to order the ProMix 4, plus maybe some other stuff like microphones, mic booms, headphones, things that go along with it. BGS.cc. So remember the winning combination, Broadcasters General Store and the Broadcast Tools ProMix 4. You can't go wrong. And that's it from here. And now let's go back to a radio museum of great stuff. And that Bloomberg radio, I do have one of those. And the SRF 100, I have one of those. And a few others that you showed. It's pretty handy.
Hey, Chris, thank you very much. And yeah, I saw that Bloomberg radio. Maybe we'll get to chat about it toward the end there. I'm sure that was that. That's not from the 1960s. No. That's much more modern.
Yep.
Figured, yeah. Okay, so hey, it's Kirk Harnack here at Edge Radio. With Beth Mann, president and CEO of Edge Radio and owner of the company as well. You've got three radio stations and
we have four.
Four
and three translators.
Ah, okay. Wow. Yeah,
seven frequencies.
Your engineer stays busy.
Yes, he does stay busy.
Mr. Beasley?
Yes, and he does a terrific job for us.
Yeah, maybe he left.
He left, so he didn't get to hear me compliment him.
Oh.
I wouldn't have said that if he was standing here.
Of course not. So we're starting at the beginning now.
Yeah.
Even almost before there was any commercial radio or any radio going on.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Tom, if you want to go ahead and peer into the glass there, and Beth.
So I probably would be banned from Kentucky if I didn't mention that Nate Stubblefield, you know, really is only 30 miles from here in Murray, Kentucky. You know, most Kentuckians believe, and many other people believe, that he was the person who actually originated radio.
Tom, turn the camera back. I have a tiny little NBS story.
Okay.
You're talking about Nathan B. Stubblefield.
That's right. WNBS.
Who Murray, Kentucky claims is the inventor of radio.
That's right.
And I had the pleasure, back in, this must have been the late 80s or early 90s, I installed a new Gates transmitter at WNBS in Murray.
So you know the man I'm talking about.
I was in the middle of doing it, and Eddie Fritz Sr., the senior of the fellow who was the NAB president for years, senior comes out and says, Kirk, you're doing a fine job. You're doing a good job in putting that transmitter in. That's a good job. Now just make sure you don't, you know, whatever your bill is, just cut that in half.
There you go. That sounds about right.
So then he told me the whole story about Nathan B. Stubblefield.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm putting a new AM transmitter at the place it's named after.
Absolutely. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Wow. But
so I had to go back and forth. So when you first see the history of radio and history of radio in the bluegrass, he's mentioned in both.
Oh.
But I certainly, you know, I was tempted. I was very tempted to say that it was invented by him. But, you know, it was Marconi, according to the patents and the records. So we go all the way back, you know, to our radios, our amplifiers start at 1919, although the first commercial radio station did not go on the air until 1920.
So look at these pre-1920 home crystal sets.
So crystal sets. Yeah. So you know, that's when they were just trying to get a signal where you could hear it, and so just tap, 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 tap. So I'm still kind of picking up pieces there. They're hard to find because people didn't know what they were and they threw them away. They just look like a box of bolts.
Yeah.
So they're really not very easy to find. The Victrolas are in there really to kind of show the history. You know, there've been many new technologies that we thought would put radio, to its grave. And that actually has never happened. Radio has always found a way in 100 years to continue to be better and better. But the Victrolas probably did die as a result of radio.
Yeah, it was that way. It wasn't Victrola killed the radio star.
That's right. That's right. So you'll notice that's a 22. This is also a 22 or 3.
In the early days, they would take that Victrola, wind it up, play the record, and put the radio station's one microphone
on that speaker.
Yeah, on that speaker.
Yeah, how cool is that? So that works, by the way. I didn't know that until we moved it here. And so I had an engineering friend of mine who was here, and we were working on the radio, and he cranked it up, and by darn, it worked. Pretty cool.
We have a 1919.
So check this out. So the neat thing about that is they used Morse international code. So you can see there where it's showing you the Morse code, okay, how to use that.
Yeah.
And you actually, that was before, you know, a commercial radio station, so they were still using Morse. And then when you skip over to the next amplifier, the Magnavox, that's an AC2C. And that unit would have been the first type unit they would have used to cover the 1924 presidential campaign. So when you kind of put yourself in the mindset of what was going on when radio was born, you know, our first presidential race heard on the radio would have been 1924 with that particular.
Now, this next thing I've seen before, and is that an Atwater Kent?
It's an Atwater Kent.
Okay.
Yeah. So Atwater Kent, That was a really hugely popular company. He was a high school dropout, by the way, a mathematician and engineering type who just didn't like school, but he was a genius, obviously, and he developed a company of Atwater Kent. This is called a breadboard because that's exactly what it is. They use a large piece of wood, and they put all of the elements on the top of it. So that is actually the way the radios looked in 1922, 3, and 4. But you can imagine women really didn't like the looks of that very much. It also wasn't safe. Those tubes get hot, oven hot. Yeah, yeah. So they used components that would have been used in a lot of vehicles. If you can kind of see that, you can kind of, you know, knowing that and looking at that helps you a little bit to put those pieces together. But women didn't like that very much. So pretty soon after the breadboards came out, which are very valuable, hard to find, especially in terrific condition, they started hiring cabinet companies. And the cabinet companies were hired basically to give radio more of a look and a feel of a piece of furniture, something that could go on a mantle or on a bedside table or in your living room.
Well, we have numerous examples here from 1925, the Crosley Super Deluxe. Now the one down here on the floor. This is a day fan.
This is a day fan. That's a mint condition radio there. I was able to purchase that from a guy that a much older gentleman who was closing out his collection. But all of these are tube radios. Mm-hmm. Most of them probably work if I could figure out how to use them. You'll see that they have multiple tuning. You've got three and four knobs just to tune in a station. So it's not easy to tune.
Yeah, these are not super regenerative receivers like we have now.
That's correct. Yeah. That's exactly right.
And there's that Thompson back in the back behind the day fan.
Yeah, so that's a really neat unit.
And look at the marketing name. It's a Neutrodyne.
Neutrodyne. They were very proud of that. That was when the Neutrodynes very first came out, and that was a marketing tool, you know, to be able to say we have the newest, latest, greatest of the Neutrodynes.
There's a 1928 Atwater Kent.
Yes, I've got several Atwater Kents. I don't know. I'm kind of partial to those. I don't know if it's the gold on their labels or their marketing or what, but I like Atwater Kents. They also made their own speakers. Of course, you had to have a separate speaker. You know, your speakers weren't built in the 20s, so you had to have multiple components.
Whose marketing idea was to call the Radiola 60 the baby coffin?
Yeah, isn't that the craziest thing ever? But you got to think about, you know, where was our country and what were we thinking about? What was going on in people's lives? So the 1928, the Radiola 60 was called a baby coffin. And if you look at it and you open it up, it actually probably is about the size of what a baby coffin would have been. Then, of course, we know what happened in 1929. All right, stock market crashes, the greatest depression of all time. Hopefully that remains true, that was the greatest depression of all time. But radio started to look very different. So look, when you hit 1928, that's one of the first Traveler versions. That Traveler SUX199 mm-hmm. has a handle on it. Mm-hmm. Well, that was the first time they really started figuring out that people cared enough about radio that they were going to carry it with them. So it wasn't just in their home.
It was a boombox.
See there? And we thought boomboxes were in the 70s, right? But no. It was 1928 when they had Traveler versions.
So it was during the Depression that the cathedral radios came out.
Yeah, so is that crazy that we're in the greatest depression of all time, and we start establishing these gorgeous radios, high-end wood, a lot of detail. I mean, clearly money got separated at that point. Mm-hmm. And people with money were buying high-end, gorgeous, well-detailed wood, exotic radios. So you'll see that in the 1930s section, which I just love. I love all of that whole 30s piece.
Those are so beautiful. Tom, you just keep showing those. Beth and I are going to walk back in front of the big camera here because we're going to take a quick break. I understand that Chris has got to leave a little early today on the show. And Chris, I wanted to give you an opportunity to ask any questions, or if you had any particular knowledge of things that you wanted us to look out for, or you want me to ask Beth about, now would be a good time to say it.
No, there's nothing I can say. It's gorgeous. The look back in history. I mean, me being a fan of electronics and radio in general, and just storytelling that I do a lot of with helping students learn stuff. You know, it's funny. Beth points out the design. Like, we'll use the baby coffin as an example. You know, you look at it's a period piece. You got to look at the time that these things were developed and designed and what was going on around. And you look throughout the history of all the radio receiver designs from the start to today, what's left today, and it represents the period. It's like a friend of mine who used to air check, as the phrase goes, commercials. As a lot of people used to do, you know, air checking radio stations, they'd record stations and stuff. He would record commercials along with the music. And he'd say, you know why? Because I want to go look back into this, you know, 10 years ago and hear what the commercials were like. What was going on back then? The music is always the same. but the commercials change with the times. So, you know, the radio museum that you have there, the display is exactly that. It shows the times from where the early starting times to where we are today. I think it's great. Visually, it's unbelievable. And if you start reading up on some of these things, it's even more fascinating how they got to where they are, the design behind them, and the rivalry between businesses and designers and all that stuff. It's a lot of fun radio history.
Super. Chris, thank you for that, your comments and that question. So Chris Tobin's been with us, and Chris, we'll see you back next week on This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack here on the live show, This Week in Radio Tech, coming to you from Katy's, Kentucky. How far are we from the actual Katy's? Is it right here?
Yeah. Right, so you're actually in the city limits of Katy's. Okay. This is the city limits, and then you'll drive on down about 5 or 6 miles, and you'll be in the downtown area.
Is Katy's the county seat?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I haven't driven around the courthouse yet.
It's not a very big county. 13,000 people.
Really?
Yeah.
So Beth Mann, president and CEO of Edge Radio, Edge Broadcast.
Edge Media.
Edge
it's Media. No problem.
And so she also is the owner of the facility. And so we're going to continue on with our tour. So we jump right in here in the early to mid 1930s. And some new names come onto the scene here. Beth, we have what? Stuart Warner.
Stuart Warner is certainly new in that timeline. Airline becomes huge. Grinnell is a new name that hits there. Zenith really made their landing right at the end of the 20s and into the 30s. And you know, I keep trying to figure out, why is it that I like Zenith so much? And I think it's because they always zagged. They didn't do what other radio manufacturers did. Oh. So, for example, if you'll look at the 1936, it's a black dial. It's called a tombstone. Here we go again.
Yes, okay.
But remember, we're now in the Great Depression, okay? We're right in the middle of the Great Depression. Zenith made black dials. They were the first to make a big deal out of what their dial looked like.
Okay.
And they that was part of their marketing. You'll also notice they made wheat chaffs there on the top. So they started carving out things in their radio because, of course, you know, we had an agriculture-based country. So that was a very cool, very flashy, very high-end radio for that timeline. So that was great.
I see a couple here from 1937, and that date sticks in my mind. That's the year that my dad was born, 1937. So, wow. Dad, Andy, here's a how's it pronounced?
F-A-D-A? That's a FADA.
Okay.
FADA is a very collectible radio, pretty difficult to find. I just added that one during COVID-19, in fact. A gentleman from Princeton, Kentucky had that, and I was able to buy that from him. It's the first wood FADA that I have. I also have a couple of others that are not wood, but that was the oldest FADA that I have, which I think is really great. Notice that all of these radios, Kirk, are called tombstones. Obviously, that Great Depression was even greater than we realized it was, since all the radios were.
We start with the cathedral radios in the early 30s.
Yes.
And the tombstone radios, I guess, had more room for a speaker. They were just a little bit bigger.
Right. Although they were both very popular all the way up until early 40s, till we got into consoles. So the 1935 Stuart Warner over in the corner, that's the first radio that I ever added to my personal collection. I was in TV at that time and probably bought it at a yard sale or something. Thought it would be cool. Having no idea I would someday build a radio room that resembles a museum.
Now, at some point, radios got tall.
Yeah, they did. So they became a focal point of your living room, of your dining area. They became a piece of furniture rather than just an electronic. One of the coolest consoles that we have, they're two right beside each other. This Fairbanks Morse was a phone company.
Oh.
Notice the dial.
Yeah.
It's like a rotary dial phone. That's a very cool radio for that reason. So that's a 1937 Fairbanks Morse. You'll also probably recognize that antenna in the back there, the tower back there?
WSM Tower.
WSM Tower. Okay, yeah. Again, for that timeline. So that's the reason that's all in the 30s would be the Ryman, which is in Nashville, in the Grand Ole Opry. Also WLAC, you'll see the ad there. In 1938, again, look at Zenith zagging. So this is called a beehive or pancake. And you can see why it's called that.
Oh my goodness.
But you've noticed that's the first time of any of the radios that there was like push button and there was something that had a pattern in the actual materials there. So that's a very cool radio. This is called a shutter dial. Okay.
Shutter dial
or teardrop.
Yeah.
Again, their focus was on their black dial, and the most collectible Zeniths are black dial radios.
Wow. All right. Another piece of furniture, the RCA Victor, the RU25, has what? Has a record changer.
Yeah, so it has a record player. That is the legendary Bud Walters. His wife, Rosemary, that was her family's radio. She tells me stories about listening to it growing up as a little girl. She'd sit in front of that radio and hear WSM in Nashville and WSB. And so that was terrific. They gave me that as a opening gift when we built this. And here's the only bad part. We already had most of our stuff in here, so we had to go up high in order to get it in that spot halfway. But I'm tickled to death to have it from Bud.
Now, we're still in the 1930s here, 1938.
Yeah, so True Tone, of course, was made by Sears. That is a 38 model, really nice condition. I try to buy most things in original condition. I don't buy a whole lot that has been redone. I just like it for the history, you know, not necessarily for the value. I don't plan to sell, so I'm not too interested in trying to get it to perfection. I really would rather have the buttons with the paint pushed off of it. And, you know, I want it to be real and very authentic. So when you get up into 39, 38 and 39, look at the difference of how things started changing. So you'll see the magic keyboard at the top. That's a keyboard because it's stacked, yeah. and it has the buttons all across it. They call that a magic keyboard. You'll see a 1939 airline. That's the gold portable right there. Look,
it handle. Looks like a suitcase.
Here we go. It looks like a suitcase. Yeah. So people started carrying those radios with them, and they were still heavy. They still had tubes in them, so they were heavy.
Wow.
Then you hit 1940, all the way at the very bottom. You start to see plastics, metal, bullets.
I want to go back different. To the 1939, that silver tone branded for Sears.
Yeah.
So as a boy growing up, we had one television in our house, a black and white. It was supposedly a portable because it sort of had a handle in the back on top of the picture tube, and it was a Sears silver tone black and white TV. So originally what, silver tone was not a mark of Sears, and it became one?
Actually, they built them for Sears. So that was Sears brand. Sears brand was Silvertone. They may have built the same radio for someone else or something slightly different.
Gotcha.
But Sears was a huge seller of radio products and electronics when you and I were growing up. And so they had their own brand.
We're going to break right here before World War II starts. And I have got to talk a little bit about our sponsor, and that is Angry Audio. Angry Audio is a proud sponsor of This Week in Radio Tech, and I want to show you some modern tech. We've been looking at all this great old tech. This is the Angry Audio Bluetooth Audio Gadget, And what does it do? Well, it will connect any Bluetooth phone into your audio console. So let's say you go out on remote, or let's say that you do a talk show or you take the occasional talk guest. You really don't need a telephone hybrid or a telephone talk show system. You just need to put one guest on every now and then. Well, the Bluetooth Audio Gadget will do it because all you do is talk to your guest on your regular phone and then connect your phone to the Bluetooth Audio Gadget. It's really easy to do. You just click the little button over to pair and you pair it up with your phone. And the Bluetooth Audio Gadget from Angry Audio is so smart that it knows which of the Bluetooth profiles to use. If you're having a two-way conversation, it uses the phone profile. If you're having a one-way, like sending from your phone, let's say you got some great music on your phone. Well, if you want to send music from your phone to your audio console, then you can do that too in perfect stereo with high quality. So the Bluetooth Audio Gadget, it sits in your control room. It's got little rubber feet on it. It's got a 110-volt plug on the back. It's got XLR professional audio connectors on the back. And that little antenna on the front is to get you the best Bluetooth reception possible. The Bluetooth Audio Gadget from angryaudio.com. And I got to remind you about the Studio Hub adapters that are available. Angry Audio owns Studio Hub, Lock, Stock, Barrel. They're making the same high quality Studio Hub adapters that you've been using in your studios for 20 years or more. I sure have. And if you're not, you're really about to discover the best way to wire your studio. So many studios nowadays use audio over IP gear to get audio in and out of the AOIP network. And so much of that is on RJ45 connectors. Well, guess what? Here's your free RJ45 cable. And to get one, when you place your order from your favorite dealer for this kind of Studio Hub adapter, say, I want my free cable. And they'll give you a free shielded 7-foot cable built to Studio Hub specs. Of course, it's you know, good quality Cat5e cable, shielded with shielded connectors, and get that free. But you got to ask for it. You don't have to say twert, but you do have to ask for it. Okay. Thanks a lot to angryaudio.com. Go to their website, check out all the good stuff at angryaudio.com. I'm Kirk Harnack here with Beth Mann. We're at Edge Media Group, and we're taking a tour of these radios in the DJ Everett III radio room. So, Beth, World War II came along.
Yes.
And what happened to radios?
So a lot of things happened, actually. First of all, we were just ending the recession. So the recession ends 38, 39. Mm-hmm. Little did we know we're going to be in full-blown war just a couple of years.
It's always something, isn't it?
It's always something. It is always something. But you'll see a picture there of our president, who was saying the Navy wants 4,000 radio operators. All of the ads on this wall explain what's going on during the war. And I bought those because I thought I would have an empty section where the war years were going on, because the radio manufacturers were not allowed to make radios for anyone other than the government. So there were no consumer sales. But we had a few things that did happen. Zenith continued on through 41.
The boomerang.
I love that. Again, you know, look what they did with the dial. They did something different. You didn't see curved dials like that, but that was something that Zenith was known for, was their boomerang. Moving on through 41, 42.
Oh, what's the Bakelite? Wasn't the first Bakelite.
So a Bakelite is the type material of the radio.
Yeah.
Okay. And those can be polished and shined. It's the type of substance that they're made out of. Yeah. I've got several Bakelites. There was the very first thing that we looked at was
okay.
a Bakelite
okay.
also.
Okay.
Thinking that, you know, all of this is going to end, some of them got to finish the production they were already in. So we have radios that carried us on through 1942.
Okay.
All right. So you'll see a Motorola 42 and a Firestone Air Chief from 1942. But then it all kind of came to a screeching halt. Philco was the last one to manufacture radios for consumers going into war. So you'll see back there in the back, that's a 1941. Interesting little story on that. That was a gift. From the first church service that started on the very first Sunday on WKDZ was a Brother Ellis. That was Brother Ellis's radio.
Oh, my goodness.
And his family has been in touch with us and is excited that they have that here. And Danny and Joyce Bozart gave us that radio. So that's got a double meaning, a double love.
I noticed there's a radio here that on the front dial it says foreign and American.
Yep. So you got multiple dials there. You have your foreign dial and your American dial. Again, going into war, which makes sense. You know, you were listening to foreign things overseas. That's a Crosley Fiver.
Yeah.
Pretty cool radio.
Crosley had that name Fiver before the internet did.
Yeah, they sure did. You got that right. Also, in 42, if you look, you have three different Philcos right there, because they were one of the last to produce. I've even got the little Philco banner there that was used for guys who were selling Philco radios. Mm-hmm. The unit you see here is from Linda Caldwell. That is a farm radio set where they had to use batteries. We didn't have AC yet, so they used batteries. And they had a better antenna system so that people could pick up stations from further away. So a battery radio that is a farm set was one of the last radios made before the war.
Do you know when it was that antennas went from being an outside affair to being maybe contained in the radio? Any idea when that happened?
No, you probably stumped me there. A farmer, literally even before the first commercial radio station was built, actually did the omnidirectionals.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know when they started putting all the antennas within, because here you're still in external antennas for sure.
Yeah, okay.
So 1943, this was a Christmas gift. It's an Echo phone. You'll notice a very different look. And that's because that radio was made only for soldiers. And we were no longer making radios for consumers. No radio manufacturer was allowed to do that. So that radio was made by Echo phone. And they called it a morale set. It's literally what they called it, so that soldiers could hear what's going on all around the world.
Wow.
That my military section, where I thought I would have no radios, actually ended up becoming pretty full. In 1945, okay, so I'll give away the answer to the tease earlier. So the only radio I don't have is 1944. I don't have a radio for 1944. So 43, and then we jumped to 45. So in 1945, there were very few radios made. The story goes that this is called a Westinghouse H125 refrigerator. And the story goes that if you bought a Westinghouse refrigerator, you got a free radio. So they weren't selling radios to anyone. They were just giving them away. So that's how they kind of got around that in 1945.
Oh, because it was still wartime.
That's right. They couldn't make radios in 1945.
We can't sell them, but we can give them away.
That's right. So that's my only 45.
And look at all these 1946 sets. Boy, the floodgates open.
Oh, yeah. So 1946, you engineering type were busy in the background building and designing radios when the war was over. You know, what are we going to do? And in 1946, you'll find every kind of material you can think of. I mean, this whole section is 46s and 47s, where the floodgates did just open. When the war was over, the country was absolutely ecstatic, and money was flowing in every direction. Philco and Zenith, you know, they were household names forever. Westinghouse, Mr. Conrad was an engineer who put the first radio station on the air, was involved with Westinghouse for 50 years. Of course, Westinghouse owned that station. And so you'll see some really great technology from Westinghouse, and it was Conrad that did that.
And names, I've never heard, Bendix, I didn't know Bendix made radios. Of course, Emerson, as you mentioned, General Electric and Philco, and I saw Sentinel.
Sentinel, Sonora. Some of them were made for other companies, and they just branded it differently, you know, like Cherokee. Oh, you don't see many of those. They just, that's just something they made to make it different. Clarion. Bendix, the green radio here is the very first Catlin that Bendix ever made. Mm. It's also the only Catlin that Bendix ever made. That was a very popular radio in 1946. People loved it. The problem was it's a very soft substance, and when they would turn it on, the tubes would get hot, and guess what happened?
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
The radio would melt.
The radio would melt or catch on fire. Oh, no. It also scratched easily. It broke easily. So Catlins are hard to find, and they're very expensive when you do find them because they're just – they're not in good condition.
And the guy in the board meeting who suggested Catlins is not working there
anymore. Worked there very long. So that's the only Catlin that Bendix made for consumers, and that was their big rollout.
So many more from 46, 47, 48. Look at all these models that came out then.
Yeah, and business was just booming. One of my favorites in the whole collection is the 1947 Tom Thumb portable automatic. That I fell in love with. I was in Cleveland, Ohio at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and I read the whole story about Tom Thumb, and that's when I really started buying. So that's the first one that I bought, knowing I was going to put it in a museum someday.
There's another silver tone, that little white one with the carry handle.
Oh, yeah. That was such a popular name. You know, Sears, you and I probably remember doing all of our Christmas shopping out of a Sears catalog.
Oh, yeah.
I had something picked out on every page and dog-eared for my mom to buy for me for Christmas.
I'd leave the catalog open on the kitchen table for mom and dad to see the bicycle with the banana seat and the high handlebars.
You got it. You got it. Me too, for sure. So yeah, you started to see Stromberg Carlson, Templeton, 48, 49. Times were just unbelievable. And then FM came about. And so that's when you're going to start to see a whole different look and feel of radios. So if you look at this Zenith here, it's a 1948. That came from my engineering friend, Ken Quincy. That has two FM dials. And there were just a few manufacturers who put both FM dials on their radios. It didn't last for very long, but when they moved the FM over to the new dial positions, the new frequencies, they had a year or a few months in there where people needed the old frequencies as well. So you'll find a few with two on there.
And 49 was a big year. My goodness. Look at all.
Yeah, 49 going into 50 was huge. You'll notice all the radios, though, got a whole lot smaller. All of them were portable. Almost every radio had a handle or was intended to be in a small space. You didn't see the big consoles anymore. It wasn't a big piece of furniture.
I'm gasping,
anymore.
Though, at this one down low. Hotel Radio Corp, it's got a coin slot.
Yeah, so how cool is that?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so it's coin operated. It's designed strictly for hotels. And you would put they were in the lobbies. These were in the lobbies.
Not in the rooms.
Not in the rooms. These were lobbies. And you would put your money in there and it's pretty cool. There's also a radio up in there somewhere, Tom. I'm trying to think where it is. Oh, it's right there. It's a 1949 Mitchell Lullaby bed lamp and radio. It had a bed lamp on it, and you hooked it onto your headboard so you could listen to the radio when you fell asleep at night. I needed that when I was a kid, for sure.
That's a white bar on the top of it if you're looking at home.
Yeah, very cool.
Oh, my gosh.
Very cool.
Well, finally, we move into the 1950s. Now, look at this record player down here low. It's got a huge radio dial.
Yep. Again, Zenith. And look at the radio dial. I mean, they did a lot of unique things with their dials. And you started seeing a lot of record players with radios in the late 40s and early 50s. So WPKY signed on the air in 1950, okay. And this is the start of our 1950 section. Okay, so that was our oldest radio station. We just celebrated 70 years in March there. And then I just get down to 1950 through 1966 at the end here. So, again, very different looks, though. I mean, no two radios really look very much alike.
Yeah, huge variety here. Did any of these, some of these had FM or not?
Yes. Yes, some did have FM.
There's one, that Zenith there, 88 to 108.
So once Zenith started doing FM in 1947 or 8 or something like that, they just about did all FM and AM. And then you'll find some that ended up being just AM still.
What's this big one down here at the bottom?
That's a German unit. Yeah. I don't really do that many foreign radios just because there are so many, and I'm out of my comfort zone with that. But both of these two large units at the bottom are German radios. Terrific. I mean, Germany was so far ahead of us in the early 50s in technology. I mean, they had booming sounds, terrific sounding radios.
Now we have a tower here, WHVO.
Yeah, so WHVO signed on the air in 1954. So that breaks up our 1954, and then we go into our 55 collection at the top.
Well, here we go with the sock hops and the drive-ins and all that stuff in the mid-50s.
Oh, yeah. DJ Everett thought the 50s was perhaps the best generation of all time, and so he collected a lot of 50s. He really liked the plastics, and I really like the wood radios probably better. I'm a little more partial, but you start to see clocks being added to the radios. Everything was portable. Everything had handles for people to be able to carry with them. And then you started seeing, a lot smaller radio on the shelf, Tom, where 1959 is. That's a little Hoffman solar-powered radio. I had no idea that solar power was even a conversation in 1959.
Now did that use transistors?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
But solar. Yeah, I'm like, what in the world? I mean, I didn't even know solar was a conversation until the 70s, really.
Wow.
I was just way behind on that. So anyway.
Yeah, so many of these do have clocks on them. I wonder if they had mechanically interconnected to turn the radio on at an alarm time.
I think we did, but maybe not until about mid-60s where it had the ability to use it as an alarm where it came on.
And then came look at that portable one you take to your hotel room with your travel.
Yeah, travel clock radio. Yeah. Yep, that's kind of a cool thing too.
Tom's getting a workout here. He's doing a great job with the camera.
He's done this more than once.
Oh, I hope she doesn't call me to run the camera again.
So there are a couple of kind of cool things. Elvis Presley absolutely owned the 60s. That was my grandmother's trash can from Elkton, Kentucky, my big mama. And so I'm like, you know what? That belongs in our 50s and 60s space because Elvis owned it as rock and roll king.
So we've got a couple more minutes right now. Is there anything? Let me ask, what's going to be next on our tour? The studio, or do we have anything else to go look at?
Yeah, we can do that. We might want to pop over and look at the radio that's right behind Tom, if I can.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Come behind you, Tom, and let you come to us. This is the unique thing about this is it is a wire recorder.
Oh my goodness! Look at this. There's the spool of wire.
Okay, so.
Oh wow!
I'll show you. You have recording wire, okay, and you could record things that were on records or on.
You could make illegal recordings of the record.
I mean, I know nobody would ever do that, but I'm not encouraging that behavior. But this wire actually came with this set, and it this came from one of my friends. Who owns radio stations in Mayfield, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
And it had all the tubes, all of the wire. Look at this little bitty tiny wire. And this is what you would thread it with, okay? So you thread the wire through the recorder.
A device to help you thread the
wire. Well, all of your wires have one of these on it, okay? So each one of these have this, and you thread it through here. And I'll move that so you can see. So then you move your arm over, okay?
Okay.
And you play it. So how cool is that?
Wow. And the radio's in there too.
And the radio's in there too.
So you could record from either the record or the radio onto the wire, and then you could play the wire back.
Right. And you also could play the wire like what we would have done when we recorded Casey Kasem on cassettes.
Right, right. Exactly.
Something kind of like that. And we would try to cut out all the talk so we would have those songs. Do you remember that? Did you ever do that, Kirk?
Yeah, might have done that.
I may have done that a time or two. So that's the only wire recorder that I have. So. We just added that a couple of weeks ago.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Well, tell you what, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back from this break, we are going to check out the studio, right? Yep. So you don't want to miss that. It's coming up next. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by MaxConnect Wireless. MaxConnect Wireless is simply amazing because it gives you prioritized LTE 4G data or 4G LTE data wherever you are, and it can even handle more than one carrier. So why is this important? You may want to put one of these at your transmitter site. You lose your STL, you lose your regular internet feed at your transmitter site. You can use this instead to feed coded audio, if you like, to the transmitter site. What else is cool about MaxConnect Wireless? It's not about the modem. It's not about the LTE modem. There are several different LTE modems that work fine with this, and you can get it from MaxConnect Wireless, or you may be able to supply your own. What's MaxConnect Wireless is actually the service, the cellular LTE service, and it's prioritized. Not only is it prioritized so you get priority over other users, that means you can be at a football game when that comes back. You can be at a football game with 100,000 fans in the stands. It's halftime. They all open their phones. They start texting and sending pictures and making phone calls and watching Netflix videos. And you have prioritized data over all the people in the stands with MaxConnect Wireless. You have prioritization over everybody except for first responders. And of course, we got to give them the first priority. Now, you can also use this to do live remote broadcasts. That works well, too. The other cool thing I like about MaxConnect Wireless is you get a fixed IP address. You know, that doesn't happen with your phone. That doesn't happen with a MiFi hotspot, you know, that kind of thing. It does happen with MaxConnect Wireless. You know the IP address, and that means you can push audio to a remote site, if that's what you need to do, especially a transmitter site. So check it out at maxconnectwireless.com. Yeah, it's spelled funny, so look at how it's spelled, write it down, or just click on our show notes on This Week in Radio Tech, and you can get there. Josh Bone has been supplying this technology to literally hundreds and hundreds of broadcasters across the USA and now in Canada too. Whether your best carrier in your area is AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile, Josh Bone can hook you up. So I highly recommend MaxConnect Wireless to do your remotes and to get emergency service to your transmitter site. Some people use it full time, and it's good for audio as well as video. So check it out, MaxConnectWireless.com. So we're about to enter the very last part of the show, and I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Beth Mann, who's the president and CEO of Edge Media, and Rob is holding the door. Okay, can you shoot Rob over here? I mean, just shoot a picture of him.
Don't shoot him. Please don't shoot him.
Rob, what do you do here?
I'm the engineer.
Oh, well, good to see you.
Rob, the engineer guy.
I haven't even been to the rest of the station yet. So after the show, can we go take a quick look at the rest of the station? Sure. All right. Beth, ladies first, let's go on into this studio. Rob, thank you very much. And tell us about this room that we've just come into.
So my friend Rob Beasley, our engineer, I'm going to have him come over here for a second, pretty much dug all of this stuff out that we had in archives. And I said, basically what I'd like to have is something similar to what it would look like in 1966 when WKDZ AM sat on the air. So he found even the turntable. Is this the coolest thing ever?
Rusco's, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'll let you kind of jump in there, Rob, a little bit about
that. Well, the spindle was rusted on the motor. So steel wool went to it.
Okay.
The wheel has got a flat spot in it because it stayed in gear for so long.
Of course it does, yeah.
But it will turn and work. So it's good, you know, to aggravate people with. Say, look, I got a turntable. The console was, from what I gather, it was the original news console at the station. And it was full of mouse droppings and you know, all the good mouse trap stuff. And it was a challenge to get it cleaned up. And it works, but it's like whack-a-mole. It'll work for a while, and then capacitor will blow, and it's, you know, one thing after another. The cart machine, that's a ITC, I'm pretty sure. And all of the stuff that we have recorded, the first sign-on and everything, I actually recorded out of that cart machine. And it works fine. Every now and then, the solenoid's a little stubborn that brings the wheel up. But it works just fine. That's the original manual, too, for that old console.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not sure the year that thing was printed, but I'm guessing it was in the early 60s, I believe, late 50s, early 60s. There's the schematic.
Wow.
And all of that stuff is still in there, with the exception of a few caps, you know, some filter caps and the power supply and things of that nature. The Revox machine came from the estate of Hal King. he was a big radio guy, big legend guy here. And when he passed away, the estate was there to purchase. So Beth Mann bought it, and that's where the Reeboks come from. And I'm not sure if that's real time correct, time period correct, but it's close. That's either late 60s or early 70s, I think, sure. Those Reeboks.
Yeah.
The RCA microphone, the 77DX, that belonged to Mr. King as well. And he used it in his studio up until he died. He did production and stuff. From his home, there's a picture of him down there in the frame.
Oh, yeah.
With that microphone, you know, doing production. He did commercials for folks around here and used that mic up until the day he died. And it's a beautiful sounding microphone, too. And it's, as far as I know, the original cord, it's a little, you know, they get dried out and start getting crinkly.
Yeah.
And it's a little sticky from, I guess, where he cleaned it, or, you know, and stuff. But it's perfectly working and it sounds absolutely wonderful.
Really?
Yeah, wow. Sounds wonderful.
Wow.
I would show you with the board, but I don't have it hooked up into the board right now.
So I will show him a really cool thing that you did. We've got audio all the way back to 1950s of major news stories that occurred throughout the region. And so we took all of that audio, most of it from reel to reels, put it on the iPad here where you could actually make your space interactive. Where's that coming from, right? And so that's a Rob trick. But that was our first sign-on from 1966.
Wow.
So very cool.
Wow.
Hundreds and hundreds of pieces of audio there. So DJ Everett was a newsman. He was a journalist, proud to be a journalist. So a lot of this is stuff that he had microphones and he had Wall & Sack. This was the original Wall & Sack recorder in mint condition. That was given to the First Church that I told you about earlier in the show.
Yeah.
And then a lot of this is newsroom equipment, scanners and two ways and portable recorders.
So, yeah, so I'm not stuff. Familiar with this box.
So that's a phone box where you could record phone conversations.
Okay.
Not that anybody would have ever recorded a phone conversation that they shouldn't be recording. Right behind you is an AP. Original AP machine that we had.
Many ribbons.
Yeah, okay. So we had that restored. And we've got a lot of the AP wire information, like from the shuttle launch, from Kennedy's assassination, from Reagan being shot. We have the actual printouts. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, no, I didn't save anything. But DJ Everett saves everything.
Oh,
so
wow.
I have a lot of really cool things that he thought enough about it to save it. So I'm glad we have those.
Some albums appeared that may have been recorded in Nashville.
Maybe. So Boots Randolph is from Katy's. He is Trigg County famedom.
Uh-huh.
So that's why that's here. And then the first song heard on WKDZ was these boots were made for walking with Nancy Sinatra. The gentleman that put the station on the air is still alive. We just celebrated his 90th birthday in March. And I asked him, I said, so why did you play that song? He said it was the first album I could reach. So he didn't plan that part very well.
Oh, my goodness. Could you come back over here, Ron? And it's about time for us to go. Could you come back over here? We're just going to all say goodbye together. How about that?
That works.
So, Beth, this has been really enjoyable. An hour is not enough time to get through everything here. But we got through most of it, but could spend a lot of time looking at this stuff.
Well, especially if you're a radio nerd like we are.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we pretty much are in love with this whole concept. But my whole team's been just fabulous. I mean, they love the space. They love what it's named for. They love our mentor. Who helped make it happen. And so today's his birthday. It would have been his birthday. And so it's been good for Katy's in Trigg County. It's been good for our company. I mean, we have people coming from everywhere. We're hosting a conference here in August for Big Deals. We're excited about that. We've had concerts here already. We've had fundraisers. We've done training sessions here. We've done lecture series already. And we only opened in October. And remember, 3 months of it was COVID. So we weren't able to do our events that we planned. So this is the bicentennial of our community. So we're going to be doing some events here for that, too.
Rob, I'm looking forward to a little more tour after the show of the studios.
I'll give you the grand tour.
I'm looking forward to it. All right. Beth, thank you so much for being on This Week in Radio Tech.
Thank you. Thank you for coming to visit us.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I'm Kirk Harnack. You've been watching This Week in Radio Tech. Be sure you visit our sponsors. They are just terrific people. Broadcasters General Store, bgs.cc, Angry Audio at angryaudio.com, and maxconnectwireless.com. Please check them all out. They help keep the show going, and I mean they really do, so your patronage is appreciated. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure you like and subscribe. That way you'll get notified when another show is available. You can also subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast aggregation software, whatever that may be, Stitcher. YouTube's a great way to do it, but there's other ways as well, whatever your favorite is. I want to say thanks to Suncast, our producer. He's got a challenging show, and I appreciate all his help today. I also appreciate Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. And we should give a little big hand for Tom, whose arms are probably too tired to put two hands together right now. Yay, Tom. Tom Rogers, our cameraman. He's been holding a camera the whole time. So thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it. Can you say hi, Tom?
Hi.
All right. Be sure you catch us next week for This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.